You're currently listening to Onyx and the World of Oil Derivatives.
I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce you to Onyx Insight, a reporting and analysis service that focuses particularly on the oil swaps market. The service comes in a form of daily WhatsApp updates, trading window reviews, monthly reports, and liquidity and volatility assessments. All our information is derived directly from our trading floor of Onyx Commodities, the number one liquidity provider of oil swaps globally. There's no service like ours, providing expert analysis across the barrel and reporting in real time from those with real skin in the game. To find out more information and sign up to our free trial, visit our website at www.onyxcapitaladvisory.com or Google Onyx Advisory Insight. Also, please be sure to check out our LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook.
Hi everyone, welcome to another podcast with the Onyx team. So I'm Greg Newman, the CEO of Onyx Capital Group, and I'm here with Luke McDermott, who is a partner in the firm and trades under Onyx Commodities on the LPG desk. So welcome, Luke.
Hi guys.
So Luke and I have actually worked together for quite some time now, coming up to 7 years. We met at our last company where we were market making together and developing out the oil derivative market there. And in since, Luke has joined another market making shop before joining Onyx around 18 months ago. So Luke at the moment trades LPG, as I said, and that's what he focuses on. But he's been in so many different markets, starting with equity stock options, single stock options, and moving to oil derivatives. And within oil derivatives, has done pretty much everything that is there, every product and every region also. So what we're going to talk about today is just a bit more about what that takes and developing markets in general, but also specifically in oil derivatives. So I think that's probably maybe the best place to start is actually as actually your history, come to think of it, because that is most interesting. So you started off kind of straight after uni pretty much, and you jumped into a market making outfit in single stock options.
Yeah, right? So I started it was a place near St. Paul's, traded single stock options. It was right after the height of the financial crisis, and to be quite honest, equity derivatives, there was still a fair amount of liquidity in euro stocks, a bit in DAX, and certainly on the interest rate side of things, but the single stock market was dying. There'd been effectively hedge funds had kind of been burnt and were pulling out as new legislation was coming in, and for that reason banks just didn't really have the flow that they used to have, so banks were trading less and less. So certainly a difficult place to cut your teeth, but really learnt a valuable lesson in trading, and just basically that you have to work incredibly hard, kind of 3 years of grinding, fighting over nickels and dimes, really.
But you completely, that was your graduate job. So you didn't actually, you weren't part of a program, or that's how you were taught?
The firm that I worked for, well, it was a junior trader program,
okay.
Not dissimilar to our previous firm where we met Greg, and one that Onyx has as well. So I kind of went and learned the basics of option theory, and then straight onto the trading floor effectively to add as much value to the firm as possible.
So how did you differentiate? Because we've both got our thoughts on that, and I can kind of add a bit of mine as well, because that's quite a common question I get asked is, and you know, we've developed our trading capability and you know become a significant market maker within the products that we've traded. But people are saying, well, how did you do that? So the classic, you go, you're at an oil trading company and they say, you worked in the operations, you worked in risk management, you worked your way up on a desk, but we had we're a very different pathway. We're trading relatively quick, and that's what was so beneficial about these types of companies, because they give you such a access to market so quickly. But you know, I know it's a kind of a longer conversation, but to begin with, you know, even at your first place, what was your kind of entrance to market? Were you kind of following someone else's strategy and trying to kind of emulate it, or were you just?
Yeah, I guess certainly at that firm it was a very traditional, the progression was a very almost traditional trade shop or bank model, where you learn what effectively your senior trader is doing. So they had reasonably good tech. They had certainly a lot of experienced traders, and you were effectively trying to learn the nuances and the, I guess, the pitfalls, but also effectively how to make money from the guy who was on the desk. Now, okay, if you had a great senior trader, then your progression, you could learn an awful lot. And if you had a naff senior trader, then you could probably sit in a role like that for years at a time and not really ever learn how to become a trader.
So you had a pretty decent kind of role model? Or
like I got moved around a bit. Like there were certainly guys I worked with who I absolutely rate, and some of the lessons that they say still ring around in my brain. Yeah. At times when you're making mistakes on the desk or when you're doing...
I remember that one you say, first trade's a bad trade.
That's really good. It is certainly a good saying, and it's always stuck with me, and more often than not it is certainly true.
For market makers specifically.
Like, yeah, because certainly the physical guys always have that bit of information that you don't have. Yeah. So they're out doing their trades early doors, effectively trying to utilise that edge, which is their edge and is their right for that edge. And obviously as a market maker, effectively you pick up on the flows throughout the day. So your edge is certainly that you feel the flows, and actually the first trade in the morning more often than not would be a bad trade. Not always, but it's certainly a good thing to think about from a market maker standpoint.
So that's what I was going to say. So, you know, from what I know about you, you know, Luke did quite an amazing thing, really, because he the company you were at, or at least the department, closed down, right? They closed the area, and Luke joined a last firm and took a very junior role to work his way all the way up, and took it completely on the chin. And within 6 months, he was running a desk in a completely different product, etc. So I guess my point is that you certainly developed an independent way of thinking. I could tell that as soon as I met you. So it didn't, as much as you may have learned from senior traders, etc., just to link it, you must have developed your own way of thinking, which probably marries more into your way of thinking in general, like even back to your days studying physics at uni, all that kind of thing. Do you agree with that? Was there a certain way of thinking you have that you've applied?
Yeah. Well, I think the equity derivative shop obviously taught me certain things, like working really hard, broker stuff. The great thing about the place that we met was that the boss also had his own ideas. And I think when I came in and I coupled those two ideas together, my original learnings with the new learnings, and a lot of the new learnings were tradecraft, whilst I'd kind of sat and traded for 3 years and made some money at the first place, actually coupling that with just the power of tradecraft and making me think deeper and deep, effectively a deep dive into trading, so not just market making, coupled those things together, I don't know, I guess something clicked.
Right, so when we talk about tradecraft then, so we very commonly talk about this in our trading program, and generally when we're speaking about trading, we know it is the most important thing, but I guess it's worth reiterating, what do you see as tradecraft? And again, you just think how you, because you've always had your own trade, but you haven't really needed someone to spell it out for you, albeit yes, within the risk limits, but why has it made sense for you, and what does it mean to you? Because I think it means something different, slightly different to other people.
Absolutely. Well, I guess to be quite honest, it changes with time as well. Yeah. When I first started trading commodities, when I was heading up the distiller desk, I ran incredibly low risk. I was in and out. I was very much mine yours and didn't particularly like to warehouse that much risk. So the tradecraft at that time was making sure that ultimately you understood your market, and to a certain extent, well, that's not even tradecraft, is it really? It's just making sure that you don't do the wrong leg, which isn't tradecraft, that's just market making. Where tradecraft now is position sizing, more important than anything. Well, I guess you start with risk of ruin. So every single market that I've ever traded, I've always started with that risk of ruin. And the risk of ruin might be as simple as, well, if you lose that much, the desk gets closed down, might be as simple as if you lose that much, you get fired. Or it might be, as you get more experience that actually, well, if I go over that number, I have to stop trading for a certain number of days, weeks, months, or whatever. One of the things that's enabled me to go into new markets and explore various different markets is, like, I've always had that very real sense of, well, this is the number, this is, if I get to that number and it's a big red number, then I've got to stop.
So what I'm hearing from there is, like, this is classic you, because you know exactly what we're talking about in your brain, and how you articulate is always going to be different to other people. I know I've seen you do it a million times, but to me that's saying essentially you see yourself as a risk manager almost, rather than just a trader. Is someone gives you an allocation of capital, and it doesn't actually matter if it's 50 grand or 100 million, because it's the same principle. You know what you're starting
yeah.
with.
Like realistically, really great traders are risk managers.
Yeah. So you're starting with that pool of capital, and you're doing the thinking first to say, right, proportionately, how much on each trade can I risk yeah. to use this and to avoid risk of ruin, and then eventually scale up periodically.
And certainly when you first start in any market, yeah. like realistically you can do as much work. You can go and look at the historical data for the past 5-10 years, and you can do as much fundamental research as possible, but I'm a huge believer in, you know, jack shit about your market until you've traded it for probably 18 months
yeah.
minimum.
Yeah.
Like 18 months is the minimum amount. Once you get to 18 months, you've seen things enough time. It's not to say that something, you can't have a game changer and a regime shift, and actually you get regime shifts regularly, particularly in our market.
Yeah, spec changes, yeah.
Spec changes, but not even that. You're talking about, I don't know, export capacity comes
yeah,
online.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't that long ago that the US didn't export crude, never mind products.
Yeah.
So things happen in life which really change stuff. And again, that's another reason, though, why you have to be a good risk manager.
So this is the thing, because there's a few steps there. So your risk manager starting, and then how you develop to becoming an expert, which I think we'll probably get onto. But I'm still really interesting, I think, for people, because I've been asked it quite a few times, and especially from the juniors coming through, they just want to do it immediately. They want to be successful immediately. And the first thing we definitely agree on is that there's no substitute to hard work, of course.
No.
But also, I was just remembering, I wanted to, first time Luke said, so Luke joined the firm we met at, he was a junior, effectively, on a kind of bigger desk, the fuel oil desk, and then showed aptitude and was kind of given the distillate desk pretty early on. And because I traded a bit of distillates, kind of knew some of the, you know, how the volumes worked, except the conversions work, things like that. And that was the first day you traded it by yourself, and you turn across, wherever you lean across to, you remember this, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
How do you hedge 50 kb like in KT? So tons, what was the tons to kb conversion essentially? So I remember saying, so yeah, 34 it's basically 34 to 50 was the thing.
Was,
and then you're like, 50
yeah,
and
to 67.
That was the 56.
Yeah, yeah.
And you still, you're getting.
I kept hedging gas oil with Brent,
yeah,
and being long 17, or hedging Brent with gas oil
yeah.
and being short.
But that's what's so funny. So you did that, and obviously,
I was lucky that day.
Yeah, but
for the record, you'd rather be a lucky trader than a good trader yeah, any day of the week.
But I just still think it's, you know, that you started, you literally your first day, you made good money, and it's a classic thing. Oh, how'd you make money? And it was classic reaction from Luke, which is I think any real good trader, especially in the market making space, will always say. It's like, well, nothing really happened. It's just you apply the same heuristics and same method we've got, that we've already derived and I've learned, and applied it just in an effective way. And so
I think hard yeah. work can mean many yeah. different things in market making. Hard, like, ultimately the reason that I am where I'm sat and have had the limited success that I have had is all down to hard work, realistically. I think it was Einstein that said that genius is 1% talent and 99% hard work, and that's so true. And hard work in market making is working the hours, it is not taking the lunches, and not, well, I don't go to the gym, I know a lot of people do. It's probably healthier to go to the gym, but I'd rather chain myself to the desk and work for everything. But it's also, once you're trading, showing numbers, it trying to get out of risk, it's trying to remember what the last number is, and if that happens, well, that happened last time, will that happen again?
Knock on effects, things like that.
Yeah, and reading the news articles and understanding how that affects your market. And even if it doesn't affect your markets, if you're constantly thinking about, well, it could do this or it could do this. So there's many different ways you can perceive hard work, and I think it's important for ultimately people who want to be the very best that they can be to try and do all of those things at the same time.
It's good advice, I think. But again, this independence idea, I know there's a lot of learnings that you've applied, and essentially you're relying on the fact you know hard work comes first. But also, from my memory, you did always even have your own way of looking at the fundamentals. So you used to come in and say, I don't know anything about oil, and actually you know a lot, an incredible amount about oil now. But it was interesting the way that you had a kind of almost systematic way. So you've got a systematic way of looking at the market in terms of the forward curve and how you're going to go in and market make it. And so that you could apply to any product, which you proved by going into distillate from being in fuel. That was the first step. Then you're trading distillates more often. So then you want to become more of an expert. So you start looking at, you want to know about your market. That's your next kind of principle for developing. But the way you did that was like always a systematic way. It was a dashboard. You create a dashboard, you look at the boxes, so the kind of forward curve interaction and seasonality, things like that. You would plot that on a kind of percentage basis, wouldn't you? The only one who did that, you like to look at it, things
yeah,
in the top
percentiles.
You're a big fan of that, and you would kind of marry this kind of like the stocks versus the box historicals versus, you know, if it was distillates, then you'd be temperature, Rhine river levels. And you pick certain factors in the market that contributed, and you would just systematically look at that versus price action. But no one ever told you that, and you did it. You did that, and that kind of developed your expertise in distillate. But then when you moved to the US and you did US crude market, domestic crude, you were looking at pipelines. But I guess, again, this, I know this is interesting to other people. You're going into new markets, but it's almost seemed like you had an ability to say, yes, I know how I'm going to analyze information, and I know what I need to look for. But how did you find four factors, I guess, is what I'm asking.
So firstly, I guess going into those markets, I wouldn't say I knew that, right, I'm going to put, let's call it a model in my mind. I wouldn't say that I knew what are going to be the four inputs, if you like, that I'm going to analyze over and over and over again. When you go and trade, it's one of the reasons why you have to have, firstly, a real risk of ruin, and have a really, really low risk appetite when you start trading. I mean, I'm talking when I went into the US grades market, which I built out and ultimately had a pretty successful model. I was doing 15 MB versus 5, and you kind of...
And you didn't care about that, because a lot of the problems we've had is, you know, the market participants will say, who's this joker?
The market generally doesn't like it. But I mean, you have to be confident enough in what you're doing to just ignore it. Sometimes you have to say, look, to the brokers, I'm starting small, I know I'm going to be bigger. You almost have to have the confidence to say it. I know I'm going to be bigger one day, but I mean, if you can just humor me for 6 months while I work it out. So for example, with the distillates, I can't remember even what month it was with distillates, but there was basically the barges can go down the Rhine River because of the low Rhine levels, and suddenly there's like all the diffs blow out. So that in itself told me, well, I need to look at this, and now I look at that every day. With the US grade stuff, you go in and you see Exxon go down and Mars absolutely takes a...
Yeah.
Mars takes an absolute fucking shit because effectively the biggest buyer of Mars in the Gulf Coast aren't buying it for a few days.
Yeah.
You see the US...
So you just were on observation mode for the beginning.
But isn't that the same as anything in life, right? You basically sit there and you basically kind of work out what's happening. And okay, you might have small risk on and you might do really well out of an event, or you might do really badly out of an event. But that's the whole point of this, start small, because if you start small, then you don't get carried out and you learn something. And if you have a huge trade on and you get carried out and then you get booted out of your company. This is why I find it actually amazing that people who lose an awful lot of money are ever given jobs again. And I find that we're in an industry where more often than not, these guys that blow up just go and sit down in another seat. I mean, it's beyond belief. Like, these guys don't have tradecraft. They don't, clearly don't read the same trading books that I've read. I mean, you read Market Wizards, and all of these guys, they started small.
Yeah,
no. They are risk managers, and anyone who's blown up is not a risk manager.
Yeah, no, it's great. So I think this is great because we can move on quite nicely to the kind of expertise. Just to recap, so from starting, what I'm kind of taking from that, it's, I think, that first mode, you're entering a new market, you have to be on observation mode, right? You have to have a real kind of yearning to take your time, be patient, and all these things you've exhibited, really not easy things to do. Like, I can tell you from my own experience, it's very hard just to sit on the sidelines while your friends are making money, and, you know, and the other desks, and you've got to have this long-term approach and back yourself to just observe and know how the confidence that you will find something that you can link. I mean, that's not a small thing. I think that's an incredibly powerful thing you've done there repeatedly. But then the second thing, so you observe, you learn, and then you start your experiments, and you start small with your risk of ruin, you build confidence, you learn your strategies, how you're going to approach the market, and then you start to scale. And that leads quite nicely to, so yeah, we're over time, but the going from there to becoming what are the important factors in developing into the number one in your market? I think that's what we're going to do now, because, you know, it's all well and good saying I can stick around, and there's a hell of a lot of value if you say to someone, sit down and trade, learn a new market, get yourself in that market, and build confidence. You've already achieved a hell of a lot, but going from there to then becoming number one, that is a huge step, which again you've managed to do. I mean, just to go through it, Fuel haven't really traded too much, but you did trade, and then you dabbled, right? Yeah, I remember you going back once and saying, "God, I forgot how much money there is in Fuel." But so yeah, so distillates, then you spent a good year or so in that
two years,
and trading, you know, the crack market, things like that were traded, but then starting to market making the European diffs, which no one traded because there was just this perception that you can't make money. Luke went in there, applied exactly the same principles we just talked about there, and made money. But then the move to the US was the interesting one, because you kind of took on this portfolio. You kind of had this mandate to kind of trade whatever US products there were. You traded biofuels, or ethanol. You traded US grades. You traded LPG, and you are where you are now. But that point, I would say US grades is probably the interesting one, because you went in there, again, there was no market maker. You went in, learned about it, applied these principles, and then you became the number one market. I think as you are now with LPG, there's quite a lot there to get from the first bit to the second bit. So what do you think, in a nutshell, you would put that down to?
Becoming number one.
Yeah, exactly. From having some kind of foothold.
So again, full credit to what was my third trading company, which was in between the US firm
and Onyx.
I went in there, and realistically I didn't particularly feel like they had the tradecraft that I'd been taught, but they believed in their view and they strapped it on and they just ran enormous.
So you saw the completely whole different.
So it was completely the opposite. Yeah. It'd gone from what I define as real hard work and expertise and like really, really strict risk limits, to I've seen this before, I'm going to put it on in huge size, and defending their positions at times.
Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't say I agreed with, like, obviously we've talked about the risk of ruin and making sure you have great tradecraft, so I don't particularly agree with that, but it did open my eyes to just like, well, actually I'm not leveraging what I'm doing
to the maximum,
and actually potentially great this could be. So ultimately I kind of went there and ended up moving to Onyx and took that with me. So
it's a belief of anything else.
It's a confidence. Yeah. Like confidence to trade bigger, to take more risk. Like ultimately results, trading's very binary. Each day you're either a good trader or a bad trader. You've either made money or you haven't made money, and ultimately results will always tell you whether you're taking too much risk or not enough risk or whatever. But I guess at that point I began to take bigger size and bigger risk, and when it was, in my opinion, significant risk reward, I would warehouse significant size
Still factoring in the risk
of growth. We talk a lot about when market makers, and we are market makers, we're a trade shop, and effectively I'll hold sometimes enormous positions, whereas the previous firms that we've worked for, ultimately they've gone back to the, without being too mean, like they're scalping, they're only in a couple of months, and they don't add anything to the market because they don't add liquidity. They're price takers. They don't bid things up. They don't move with the market, in my opinion.
Okay, so there we go. So we go from establishing, you know, kind of presence there and able to kind of be around in the market with your own strategy, and then moving to number one is like quite a few things. But it sounds like the first thing is like limiting belief. So if you have limiting belief that you can't, you know, we kind of got that indoctrined into us, I felt, in the company we met at, was like, you know, we're a small players. Don't annoy the market participants. Don't annoy the brokers. You know, what I've learned since is, you know, when you are quite a big, the market makers have a huge amount of influence in the market. They're a considerable amount of market share. And as you say, if you learn the kind of intricacies very, very well about your market, you can have quite considerable influence in how things are priced, on the bid offer, etc. So having that backing of yourself and scale leads to, you know, a quite considerable, this whole idea of being number one, I mean influence, and I mean volume, and that's kind of what you're saying, by not having that limiting belief, but having the confidence that you can do it and scale it, is essentially what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, what do I mean?
Yeah, no, it's a hard one. It's not like there's a hard and fast rule, but one thing I have wrote down here was also the kind of idea of expertise over ego. So, you know, we've gone from the first thing of having experimenting and learning, but then once you've done 18 months, you put it at least, and you've traded quite significantly and doing a lot more volume, at that point you should have quite, if you've done the right learning, you should have quite a considerable amount of expertise. But as soon as you let ego take over the fact that you start to make money, that's when things like your trade car can fall apart, right?
That's something I've been quite strict on from day dot at every single firm I've been at, like particularly with the younger guys, but myself as well. I wouldn't, whilst I'd say most people need to enjoy their wins, I never find that I enjoy my wins. I wear my losses and I don't enjoy my wins. In my head, it's just me doing my job.
Yeah.
But I think that's just me kind of keeping a lid on, as you say, expertise over ego. As soon as ultimately you believe that you're the man, inevitably the market is going to tell you quite quickly that you're not the man. And realistically, what changes? You have a great day, you have a bad day, nothing actually changes.
Yeah.
And I think if you were to ask my brokers, is Luke having a good day or having a bad day, my guess would be that they think I'm having a bad day when in fact I'm having a good day. Because actually I'm just as intense, perhaps more, if I'm flying.
The protectionist kind of thinking, rather. So I've got a weird question, or at least kind of opinion on this, is for me, and I think we are quite similar in a lot of ways with our trading, and I actually felt quite uncomfortable when I was doing well, because constantly, like, if I'm doing well, and it was such hard work, because let's not have any kind of misunderstanding, it's incredibly hard to do this well. And once you are doing very well, and especially when there's an element of, you know, it's gone right, it's, you know, had a bit of luck and things are coming, I just felt uncomfortable, because you're waiting for the next humbling and for the next kind of, you know, as you say, you've done nothing different, yet your P&L is so much higher. It can be quite disconcerting, because you're thinking it doesn't marry with hard work equals hard work. Hard work equals large P&L. It's hard work over time that compounds, and expertise will develop into, you see what I mean? And do you find a similar thing? Like when you're making money, you're kind of almost a bit uncomfortable. You're kind of agreeing in the sense that it'll put you under stress.
I think I'm just so on edge all the time that I'm kind of uncomfortable and full of cortisol, whether I'm making money or losing money.
But as you said, it's even potentially worse when you're making money, and that's because you're worried about what's coming next and you want to protect it. Is that what I'm getting from that?
I think it's just the level of intensity.
Right.
That I'm just so desperate to not let the intensity drop.
Yeah, fair enough, yeah.
That I will be like that. But I wouldn't say... I completely see your point. And I think that in the markets, actually, you can work so hard. And generally, I'd work harder if I was losing. that often the results aren't proportional to how hard work you are, or if you've basically worked it out, you can be unlucky for a long time. But again, go back to your risk of ruin, go back to your position sizing. Mm. The market can effectively, what's the phrase? The market can stay irrational for longer than you can stay solvent.
Right, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And ultimately, you kind of position sizing, and as it gets more dumb, you can put a little bit more on, and if it gets even more dumb, put a little bit more on, and then when it turns, when you know it's turned, then that's when you can potentially buy or sell, or whichever way around it is.
Yeah, yeah. As in, not putting words into your mouth, but as in, for sure, what I've also observed is to being number one and maintaining that is probably the same in absolutely anything, but it's not staying still, and that kind of relentless improvement, self-improvement especially, where you're saying, okay, fine, I'm number one right now, but what are my competitors doing? Where is there a space where I can go into which I still have an edge? Where is, there an opportunity which I can spot, which I'm just constantly on the lookout for opportunities, and that's something you do all the time.
The other thing that's absolutely vital is, and just to spin off from your point there a little bit, the other thing that's absolutely vital is adaptability. Because one thing I'd say about trading, like going out to the US with the mandate of trade anything that we don't trade, which is effectively trade anything that we don't know how to make money in yet.
Yeah.
Traded them all very differently. They're all like, you've got NGLs, which has multitude of curves. You've got the US crude grades, which effectively trade in pipelines, and effectively just, well, what does the refinery need the most? You've got ethanol, which at the time was just a single curve.
Yeah.
And you just have to find a way to trade things differently. And now you take that and say, if you just trade in one market, your market will constantly change.
Mm.
So if you don't adapt, you will adapt or die. It is as simple as that.
And the ability to think for it yourself, right? So new news comes in, you kind of think, I think it's going to be affected this way.
Yeah.
And just having a view even if it's wrong allows you to at least kind of explore.
And honestly, I'd say when that news comes out, 40% of the time, I'm wrong. It does what?
Not is irrational, or at least
and it can be irrational for months and months, or maybe I was right but it stays irrational, or maybe I was right and it goes that way. But either way, you kind of get that news and you make a decision and you take a view, and if you're in the market tells you whether you're right or wrong.
Fascinating stuff. Well, thanks very much, Luke, indeed, for taking time, because he's just taking time off the trading floor. We've managed to grab half an hour, so thank you very much for doing that, Luke. And guys, I hope you enjoyed listening to that. And please tune in next time. Thanks.
Ciao.